Welcome back to Real Talk Torah, courtesy of the database with Rav Yeshua Eisenberg. And today, I am joined by my older brother, Rav Daniel Eisenberg. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I always love to have one of my brothers when we have one of these intense Parsha conversations. Today's conversation, this discussion, is going to be on a heavy issue from Parsha's Toldos, the issue of the scheme, the deception, the situation in which Yaakov Avinu usurps the brachos from Esav, from their father Yitzchak Avinu, all carried out and orchestrated by Rivka Imenu. Before we have that conversation, I just want to thank our sponsor for this week. This is my sister-in-law, Esther Freund, and she is doing it in Schus, in Mazel Tov, for the bar mitzvah of her son, her Bechor, Yosef Eliyahu. And so I'm going to wish you a Mazel Tov right now. And thank you for sponsoring. Anybody who wants to sponsor, all you have to do is reach out to me at thedatabase@gmail.com. That's the data and then base, B-E-I-S, @gmail.com. And for whatever schus you want, you can just reach out and we will be happy to have your sponsorship. Okay, now let's go right into the issue of Daniel. So it's a very heavy issue in the parasha, as I mentioned earlier, and it's hard to relate to on multiple grounds. And we hear the story.
I feel that when we're younger, you know, depending on your education, right? I feel like if you have a typical yeshiva education, when you're younger, it doesn't really strike you as much.
As many stories in the Torah don't.
But when you're learning it again, as you're older with the more developed perception of life and of Torah learning, you really have to grapple with some of the challenges here.
Right. So, but I guess before we go further, let's just outline the story. I assume most people know it, but we're gonna just break it down anyway. We know that Rivka Imenu, after her barrenness, she eventually gives birth to these two children, Yaakov and Esav.
Mazel tov.
Esav is the Bechor. Rivka's going to sponsor next week. Rivka gives birth.
She's going to pay double. So, Chevri, you have to try to do a triple sponsorship if you want to be that Rivka next week.
So Rivka has these two children, and she does have a prophecy. While she was pregnant with them, she has a prophecy, or she hears from Shame. The older or the Rav is going to serve the Tzair, which presumably means the older is going to serve the younger. And we grow up learning that Yaakov is the Tzaddik, Esav is the Rasha, which is the Pashup Shah of the story. But we know that Yitzchak favors Esav. The Chumash says that Rivka favors Yaakov. And at the end of Yitzchak's life, or presumably the point where he's expecting that he might die, so Yitzchak wants to bless Esav. I'm skipping the whole middle of Parsha's Toldos right now. You can go to Parsha Panorama to find out what happens in the middle. But Yitzchak wants to bless Esav, and Rivka overhears, and ostensibly Rivka's comes up with a scheme she arranges that Yaakov will deceive Yitzchak and get the blessings, intercept the blessings before Esav comes. So although Esav is preparing food, Yaakov is preparing the same dish, and Yaakov comes in with the food, gets the blessings, and the rest is really history. Yitzchak ultimately concedes to having blessed Yaakov when Esav comes back, but at the end of it, we walk away with this story, that Yaakov forever, Bini Bechori Yisrael, right? Esav was originally the Bechor. One story that I glossed over is the fact that in their childhood, Yaakov actually bought the birthright, the firstborn status from Esav. Right? Esav comes back from the field, he's tired, and now, and Esav says, I'm going to die, give me food. So Yaakov gives him the food only under the condition that he swears to give him the firstborn status. He confers it upon him. And then, and again, we're left with Bnei Bechori Yisrael. For generations, we are the nation that we are because of this story.
Right.
Okay, so
that's a good summary.
So now that we have that, we have this story while we consider, we grow up learning Midvar Sheker Tirchak, right? I spoke about this in a different Real Talk Torah. It's a Marvelous Midas Machine song, right? So, but it's not just a Marvelous Midas Machine song. It's a pasuk in the Torah. We distance ourselves as much as possible from
presumably that the pasuk is quoting Marvelous Midas.
Uh huh. Well, even so, whether you want to talk about the topic of Genevas Das, which is simply misleading another person, you have Midvar Sheker Tirchak. You're not supposed to be dishonest. You know, by all means, you're supposed to distance yourself. And we know that the Gemara in Bava Metzia famously quotes three examples of cases where you could lie. And we know that we had in 2 weeks ago's parsha, Vayera, we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu lying for Shalom Bayis. So there's a lot of leeway, and maybe we could argue that this is one of those cases, but you still relate to the, like, you know, you look at the story, and on the one hand, like you said, we relate to it as when we learn it from when we're children, so we have this very superficial way of learning it. It's almost like Yaakov Avinu, being Yaakov Avinu, who is a tzaddik, so I think we're trained innately not to ask questions on it, and just say Yaakov is the tzaddik, and Rivka said do it, and Rivka has Ruach HaKodesh, so of course do it. And Esav is the Russia, so all's fair in love and war.
That, right, and not to necessarily knock that approach. I mean, we can come back to that later, but just because we're trained to view Yaakov as a tzaddik doesn't mean that that is incorrect, definitely not at that stage of life, meaning when we're younger to learn that way. But yes, at the end, this is the impression we have, and when we get older, we reread the story, and we have to... We have to grapple differently,
right? Because I think you can go in the opposite direction and also make a mistake, right? As you just pointed out, which I think was I'm glad that you did. We're not saying that must be Yaakov is not a tzaddik. Of course Yaakov is a tzaddik, and he's our forefather, the Bechir Teshuva Avos. Where the whole point of this conversation is not to say, let's take a critical look at this and, you know, call him out for what it is. I do think we should look at it with intellectually honest eyes, but you can go to the opposite extreme and say, well, yeah, that was just a bold-faced lie. You know, he went in, said, I am Esav, your firstborn. And if you're looking at just the text of the Chumash, you walk away with that, you'll say, look, you know, just like any person in politics lies for convenience. You know, Yaakov had something, he had an agenda, he needed to get it done, and when you don't know how to do it with honesty, you do it by lying. You can sort of have that depiction also, which I think is a mistake.
Right. So what you have to do over here, and really every story in Tanakh, is that on the one hand, as from Jews and supporters of the Masorah, so we have to, on the one hand, treasure the Masorah that we have, the tradition that we have that's passed down, the oral tradition, everything that Chazal tell us, and just also big picture ideas. For example, beyond any particular story that Chazal tell us about, we also have a big picture tradition that Yaakov is a tzaddik and one of the Avos that we look up to for inspiration throughout our lives. So there's that. You always have to. So that's a big piece of the Masorah, as well as the individual the Pshat over here quoted by Rashi and the Gemara. So there's that. But on the other hand, also what we have in our tradition is the exact text of the story as it is before our eyes. It is our tradition that every single word in the Chumash is as it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu from God. Therefore, the impression of the story that you have in front of you, that if you do a simple read of the piece of literature, holy literature, albeit holy literature, but the piece of literature in front of you, there is inherently truth to the words you see in front of you. So, if it could be, I'm not saying it is, we're going to analyze the story, we're going to take a look. But if at the end of the day, the simple read in front of us is that Yaakov is bad, Chas v'Shalom, he did something wrong, so that's a reality that we have to try to make work with the Masorah that we have. We can't just ignore the text, because the text is also part of our Masorah.
Right, very good. So, I think a good mashal to what you're saying another dogma actually that we have in the Torah, we have a pasuk saying that Vayishkav Ruvain and Bilhah, right? And Chazal tell us right away, and all the Mefarshim, you will hardly find a parish that will not quote the Masorah from the Gemara in Shabbos that says that the event that's described in the Chumash is not, you know, you can't translate it straight because the straight translation is not an accurate portrayal of what happened in the story. Reuven and Bilhah did not have a union, but Reuven moved the bed. And, you know, even all the Pashtunim will say this is Chazal's tradition, which is important, meaning we're not saying that's not what the text says. The text says what it says, but you have to realize that it's qualified by a tradition, and you can't really divorce the two. So, I want to, you know, take that same concept that you just brought here and with my dogma and just apply it to this story. For example, I mentioned earlier in passing that the Chumash says, you know, that Yaakov states this bold-faced lie, Ani Esav Bechorecha, right? And Chazal have a very, or, you know, Rashi quotes it at least right here. He tells you how you're supposed to read those words, right? So in the story, Yaakov comes in, right? So okay, Vayomer Yaakov El Aviv, Anochi. It's here. It's Anochi Esav Bechorecha. It's Perek Chav Zayin Pasuk Yud Tes. Vayomer Yaakov El Aviv, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Now, translate that straight. I am Esav, your firstborn. Right, it looks like a lie. And then you see Rashi right there. Anochi hamevi lecha. I'm the one who's bringing to you. Ve'esav hu bechorecha. And Esav is your firstborn. And if Yaakov actually uttered those words, there's no way he said the sentence straight out. You know, it must be he whispered some of the parts. To, now, okay, now, here's what I you know, want to... Here's what I think I most people naturally struggle with when they read that Rashi, and how we're going to hopefully deal with that Rashi. The struggle, I think, is obvious. The Pasuk says what it says, I am Esav, your firstborn, which looks like a bold-faced lie. Rashi says, no, of course not, right? He says, I am, Anochi is modifying the one bringing you the food, and another factual statement is that Esav is your firstborn. So, the reason why we don't like that, you know, intuitively at least, viscerally we don't like that, because it just does. It sounds like it's changing the story. It sounds like it's editing the text. It's.
So I think there's two problems. There's that we're you know, that's not what the pasuk says. You're editing the text. But another problem I think is that. Okay, so let's give it to you. Let's say that there's some words in parentheses in the text, and you should insert words there. But is that really acceptable if you technically said words of truth, but they right. but really the purpose was complete deception? When he says, "Who are you?" and he says, "I am who I am," and Esav is your Bechor.
Right, the Maris Ayin for us as the readers is very clearly that he looks like he's lying.
Like, it's, oh, so what I would get from this is that, oh, it's okay to lie as long as it's technically true.
All right, so good point.
Which
so now.
Certainly, so, Gnevas Das. I think that's a second problem that you have, even if you accept the added words from Rashi into the text.
Right, so I guess the first part is assuming, like, again, we're playing devil's advocate and we're putting our skeptical glasses on. Or maybe you might want to call it our intellectually honest glasses on. We're saying, Rashi, come on, is that really what happened in the story? That's the first. And then the second is, and let's say we grant you, as you said, grant you that that's what Yaakov actually, those were the words that came out of Yaakov's mouth. So even then, does it fix what is blatantly wrong with the story in our eyes? So what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, if I could just add one point,
sure.
Just to strengthen all our questions, and then part of the Masorah, just what's so painful about this is that we are told that the primary midah of Yaakov Avinu is Titen Emes LeYaakov. That we are told that he is a man of truth and perhaps even a paradigm of truth. As much as Avram is a Baal Chesed, and as much as Yitzhak is a Gibor, a Baal Gevura, so Yaakov is the man of MS. And then we're you know, there are several instances in Yaakov's life where he steals the heart of Laban, meaning he deceives Laban.
Right.
A couple of times, actually. There are, it's very questionable.
And by the way,
it could be that
in multiple of these stories, we can have an ends justify the means approach. If Yaakov thinks Laban's going to kill him, for example, in that story, you could say, okay, maybe Gneivos Das is warranted there. But you're right, each stage, we have that issue, especially Yaakov being the Ish, you know, MS. And I want to throw something on top of that, because I had a conversation with someone who wanted to compare Yaakov Avinu to a Slytherin kind of character. That, you know, he's cunning, he's determined, he has a way of manipulating the things that he can get what he wants. At least that's what you might theoretically get from this story, just the text. But go back to Rashi.
I mean, that which is what Esav accuses him of. He says Yaakov is Milashon.
Right.
This Mirma.
But since you pointed out the whole idea of our Masorah, that Yaakov is an Ish Emes, I want to direct you back to Esav and Yaakov when they're born, or rather when they grow up, and the Chumash describes the characteristics of Esav and Yaakov. And with Rashi's help, it just glares at you. Right? And what does Rashi tell us about that? So, Yodei Atzayir, Latsuda Laramos, he can ensnare, he can deceive, as Aviv, his father, Befiv, with his mouth. Right, and so I'm gonna skip to Yaakov. What does it say about Yaakov? V'Yaakov Ishtam, he was a simple, wholesome man, Yosheva Holim. And what does Rashi say about that? Tum? Eino Baki Becholela. He's not an expert in all of these things that I just talked about earlier when I was describing Esav. He's not an expert at these things. And keep going. Kilibo Kain Piv. As is his heart, so is his mouth. You will not find in Yaakov Avinu something that comes out of his mouth that's not what's in his heart. Misha Eino Charif L'Ramos. We're not talking about someone who's sharp and deceiving. And someone like that, Karoi Tam. That's called Tam. You're called simple. Now...
Or wholesome.
Yeah, he's wholesome, he's simple. Now, the two people Rashi are describing, you would think that the former... Based on the story that we have in front of us, you think that the former is a description of Yaakov. He's someone who knows how to trick people with his mouth. And Esav, you would say he's unrefined. You know, he doesn't look crafty. And Esav is the one that gets duped throughout Parshas Toldos. Yaakov seems to be the one that has ways of manipulating circumstances to getting what he needs. Albeit, you know, Rivka helped him out. But it's so fascinating that Rashi's not going off on a limb. Rashi knew what the Parsha was going to say later when he told us that Yaakov, that Kilibo Kain Piv, that Yaakov is absolutely not an expert in these things. I think that's just fascinating. It's not just that Yaakov is an honest man, but Yaakov is a man that does not know how to lie. Some people are bad at lying. Like, I personally, I think I'm a terrible liar. And I hope I'm a terrible liar. But, like, you know, even in circumstances where you are allowed to lie, I'm very, we alluded to earlier, there are circumstances where a person is allowed to bend the truth. I naturally am uncomfortable in all of those situations. I'm just not good at it. I don't think I'm very convincing at being a liar. And it's like that sounds like what Rashi's saying is Yaakov was not really a capable liar. He's not a bucky in these things.
Right.
So now we try to... Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's Rabbeinu B'chaya who points out that this is... That this split of the two descriptions are actually like reverse parallels of each other. That he's the Ish Sadeh, so he's the Yoshev Ohalim. He's in the field, he's in the tents. And he is Tam, and he is Yodei Atzayit. That he is a hunter and he's wholesome. It's that there's an exact opposite here. And one is as you might call a trapper. He is a hunter. He is a deceiver. And the other one is the exact opposite. Someone who could barely deceive if forced into the situation to do so.
Right. So now we have that picture of Yaakov Avinu, and. It's fascinating because Yaakov pulls off the lie here. Now, there is that Rav Hirsch, Right, there's a Rav Hirsch, there are a couple of famous Rav Hirsches in Parshas Toldos. There's the one that says that Yitzhak and Rivka didn't give Esav the proper chinuch for what he needed. But the Rav Hirsch that I wanted to talk about is the one that says that Rivka intentionally needed to use a scheme because Rivka had tried to tell Yitzhak, you know, throughout the lives of their children, that Yitzchak was being duped by Esav, thinking that Esav was someone who was worthy, and he really wasn't. And so, and in fact, Rivka needed to show Yitzchak that he was being duped. And some, you know, you might have the approach that, you know, Yaakov was not really good at these things, and Rivka was kind of trying to push Yaakov and almost make Yaakov into someone who was able to pull off a trick. But that also might speak to how this was not Yaakov's natural craft. And maybe that's what you find maybe that's consistent with the later Rashi that says that Yaakov couldn't really utter the words, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, straight. He couldn't. That's inconsistent with Yaakov's personality.
Right, so that would actually be a way to understand that.
But again, we still struggle with that Rashi later because it's like, come on, the Torah presented it in a certain way, and you're going to tell me now, you know, this Midrash is going to come along and tell me that the words that the Chumash says, we shouldn't believe our lying eyes, but really, Chazal are telling us what, you know, what Yaakov actually said that day. It makes you wonder what Chazal had in mind. Chazal clearly had something in mind.
I think you really just answered it. I think that's a good approach for... I think that's one of the answers that's suggested to explain how Yaakov is in each MS, despite especially this scene. I think this scene is one of the biggest demonstrations of his of Yaakov's, I guess, being a deceiver. Right? There are other instances later on, especially in Vayetze, but this scene I think is one of the biggest ones. How do we make this fit in with Yaakov being in each MS? And the answer is that he was an Ish MS who was like forced into the situation where he had to lie, and he could barely bring himself to do it. There are other midrashim.
I think I know which one you're about to quote, and please keep going. The one about the malachim.
Midrashim? Do you want me to not quote
midrash? No, I want the midrash.
Okay, so there's one midrash where malachim grab his arms, right? The malachim from the right and left in Bashem, Amichal and Gavriel grab him by the right and left arms, and they drag him before Yitzhak. He's about to chicken out. They drag him before. I believe there's even a midrash, might be Rishus Rabba, that said that Yaakov was so terrified. I'm not out of cover to the tzaddik. I'm not going to say what happened to Yaakov. He was so nervous, but you can imagine.
So he
could not bring himself to do it. He was like the Chazal tells us that he was like forced by the malachim.
Right.
And what that would mean over here, though, it doesn't bother me really that Chumash leaves out words, because what the Chumash is saying, essentially, you know what really happened here? You know what actually took place? Yaakov told the lie that Yitzhak needed to hear at the time. That's what, for all intents and purposes, that's what happened. However, the truth is, what actually happened, what really took place, is that Yaakov, even despite the lie he needed to say, or the deception he needed to put forth, he happened to have done it in an honest way, because he, the Yaakov, the man of MS, could not possibly get his mouth to utter words of falsehood. Yes, at the end of the day, when push came to shove, he needed to deceive, and he indeed deceived, and that's what the Torah records, because that's really what the Torah needs for the narrative to go on. But if you want to talk about the man himself is an Ish MS who did not actually let himself utter the lying words. So that really, that I think answers up the Titan Amos Yaakov. He is a man of truth. Just over here, he for whatever reason, which we didn't really properly discuss yet, he needed to lie. And this Rashi over here, which throws in words, it throws in words, because that's not the intent of the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't need to tell me but Yaakov's truthfulness at this point. The purpose of the narrative, we need to know about Yaakov's lie that Yitzhak needs to hear, and it also really addresses the point of what's really being said. I think that this really does does deal with it, because then we said Rashi doesn't really help, because Yaakov is still deceptive nevertheless. And yeah, but it could be that's not the point. Yes, of course he's deceptive. He needed to be deceptive here for whatever reason. But even when he was deceptive, he couldn't bring himself to utter a lie because he was an Ish Tam.
So I was thinking of what I think is an interesting reversed alternative of what you're suggesting. Just to summarize, you're saying the Chumash tells you, for all intents and purposes, this is what happens. And the Midrash tells you the historical aspect of, okay, but you recognize that Yaakov was actually really honest, and this is actually how he said it. So, and the Torah says, if your takeaway has to, I want your takeaway to be that, yes, Yaakov in this situation had to lie, and he did it. And the Midrash says, no, that he did it in a truthful way. So I was thinking a perhaps reversed way of looking at it is that maybe the reversed way of looking at it would be that Yaakov said the words Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Now, Chazal are telling us that Malachim dragged him in. Chazal are telling us that he actually said, I'm the one bringing you the food and Esav is your firstborn. You can look at all of those Midrashim homiletically, say that none of those were historically what happened. Now, what's Chazal's agenda, quote unquote? And Chazal are not making, you know, you could say it's a historical fiction, sort of way. I'm trying to say that carefully because I in terms of how you approach Midrashim in general, I think it's a delicate conversation. But let's say the idea is that did Yaakov say the words Anochi Esav Bechorecha? Yes. But was Yaakov absolutely uncomfortable, even in the situation where lying might have been justified? Because there are many, we find various situations where, for the greater good, it could be that, I don't like to use the term that the ends justify the means, but this crime was justified here. But nonetheless, recognize how the Ish Emes in this situation was in a place where he didn't want to. He really didn't want to, and he would try as much as possible, even if he was saying something dishonest, to say it in a way that wasn't necessarily that way. And did it happen the way the Midrash is saying? We have no real way of knowing for sure. But the point is, if Chazal had, quote-unquote, an agenda, it was to let us know that whatever you think of this story, Yaakov was an honest person, Yaakov was a tzaddik, and Yaakov might not even be wholly to blame for the circumstance that he was in. And I think the takeaway is the same as what you're saying, but it's a slightly reversed approach.
Yeah, for sure. It's whether the Midrash quoted by Rashi is literal and the pasuk is figurative, or lav dafka, or vice versa. And
right.
I bounce back and forth throughout my learning. Sometimes I lean more towards here, and sometimes I lean more towards there. And I think both are correct. At different points, so
right.
both would possibly explain this troubling Rashi, and both would also address the question of Yaakov remaining the Ish Emes despite this deception.
Right, and so now another part of the conversation, and I think we're going to wrap up soon, but another part of the conversation is how we relate to the story. Now, it happened. Yaakov is the Bechor, and this is what he did, and historically, there was a deception story. It happened. Now, how much of that was the right thing to do? How much of it was the wrong thing to do? All things considered, Yaakov is tzaddik. Yaakov is an Ish Emes. Now, by the way, a lot of stories about deception are not stories about pathological liars. Right, a lot of stories that we encounter every day that pertain to deception are not stories about pathological liars. They're stories about honest people who are in very sticky situations where sometimes they can't just say the truth. And I think that, that's a story that I think should speak to all of us. Right, the Chumash is not telling, is not talking to pathological liars. It's talking to honest people, honest everyday people like hopefully you and I, and it's saying, this is the situation that you might find yourself in. Now, when we relate to the situation of, did Yaakov do the right thing or the wrong thing, we know that this is what Rivka told him to do. Presumably, he was supposed to listen, but you find Midrashim in the other direction that almost seem to blame Yaakov, right? We find with Leah, when Leah deceives, Lavan and Leah deceive Yaakov with the marriage, and then we find Lavan saying, "Oh, in our place, the older marries first." you know, and it seems to be like a shtuch to Yaakov, and Leah saying, oh well, you know, you were okay with deceiving your father and duping your brother, so now I'm doing the same thing, and you're going to get mad at me for it. So we see
there are more instances where he seems to suffer the consequences of this deception with, I don't know if you want to get into it, but with certain things that happened with Tamar and Yehuda and certain things with Mechiras Yosef,
right,
which all seem to be a consequence.
So actually, let me quote you a Mar Makom. So my Rebbe Rav Yonason Sacks, the Rosh Shiva that we shared, he in his Sefer, he is very prolific, his Sfarim Yomim Mikedem on Chumash, on Parsha. And in this story, he quotes the Zayas Ra'anun, B'Shem the Gra. So I'm not really, I don't know much about the Zayas Ra'anon, but the Zayas Ra'anon, B'Shem the Gra, he has a pshat on the pasuk.
I live the Zayas Ra'anon.
Yeah, I live it too. It's on the pasuk where Rivka Imenu says, Alai kilalos chabini, that the curse will be upon me. Right, so when Yaakov says, if my father finds out that I'm doing this, he's not going to bless me, he's going to curse me. And then she says, no, the curse will be upon me. So that word, a lie, comes up again later in the Torah when Yaakov Avinu says that all of this came, kulana, all of this came a lie upon me. And there Rashi quotes a lie, ayin is Esav, lamed is Lavan, and yud is Yosef, the Mechiras Yosef. So when it's incredible, but this Zayas Ra'anon B'Shem L'Gra says, what's Alai Kilalos Chabini? Rivka Imenu maybe outwardly is telling Yaakov, it's all going to come upon me, this is all going to fall upon me, and it sounds like none of it's going to fall upon you. But apparently it was an unwitting prophecy that, no, you know what's going to happen to you because of all of this? A lie. Ayin Lamed Yud, Esav, Lavan, Yosef. Almost as if the very pasuk which should be taking the burden of blame off of Yaakov is actually saying, no, and you're going to bear the brunt of the klala that's going to happen later in your life. And apparently it's connected back to this story, that you're going to experience gullus. So,
yeah. And there are also various midrashim that just point to the tears that Esav shed, how much suffering that it brought to Klal Yisrael, especially at the hands of the Romans and the descendants of Esav, because of the deception, which, you know, if that was what's supposed to be, so that's, you know, something you also have to deal with. If Yaakov's getting punished, does that mean that the deception was something that he should not have done?
Right.
Despite telling him to have done it.
Yeah, and so Rav Yonason Sacks quotes some other Mar Makomos that suggest that part of the Bnei Bechor Yisrael is the Galus experience, that was what he was inheriting. So we say in the Haggadah, you know, that talks about in Aram Yovidavi, or is it there? Or no, it might be in Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah. But the story talks about how Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, Esav inherited Seir. Right? So part of the story is, part of being the Bechor is the promise of the Bris Bein HaBasar, that you're going to go to Galus. Meaning that's what you bargain for when you say I want to be the Bechor. So what you're essentially taking upon your shoulders is whatever Hashem promised Avraham was going to happen to his primary offspring. So that's what Yaakov was inheriting when he took upon it. So that you can look at that and say Yaakov didn't do anything wrong, but this is just what you get when you inherit the firstborn status. Or there are other midrashim that seem to imply that there was an aspect of incorrectness to this story, what Yaakov did. And so it makes you wonder, if Yaakov is the tzaddik and Yaakov absolutely did what he was supposed to do in this situation, and yet, you know, like they say, machlokes is a fire. So maybe dishonesty is also like a fire. You know, however way you slice it, even if you're dishonest in a circumstance where you're allowed to, but it's a fire. It has there's a messy outcome. It's dangerous, and if whatever fire catches, it can damage things, and that's what led to Yaakov's whole future with his children and deception and Yosef and all the things that he went through. But it's again, it's we struggle with this because we want to know, you know. In a similar situation, we would probably tell most people not to copy what Yaakov did in that story. Most of us don't have Ruach HaKodesh. Most of us are not being guided by Rivka Imenu. So we would probably not copy it. And yet we rely on this story. As I said, we are Klal Yisrael because of this story. So,
right.
I think if there's one takeaway, it's that it's a very difficult story, and it's a difficult part of our DNA. And there are apparently, you know, you got to do what you got to do aspects to this story, and then there's, you know, it's not the best mode of getting what you need to, you know, getting what you need, even for the greater good. You know, if there's a better mode, a more honest mode, you know, then that would be the way.
Right, and I mean, I don't know if I want to get into it now, but it could be that the fact that the situation required this was the fact that it needed to be that Yaakov needed to see Yitzhak and take it away. It could be that's due to the fault of various players, Yaakov himself included, and perhaps Yaakov.
So,
taking the Bechor in the first place.
We can touch on that for just a second, because again, Esav, we know, was a Rasha. So to whatever extent Yitzchak knew that Esav was a Rasha, Rivka's position was Esav can absolutely not receive the brachos. And, you know, maybe Yaakov could have done something that Esav wouldn't have been a Rasha. You know, the only earlier story we have is the Mechira with the firstborn status. And there's the first time we see Esav looking not like a tzaddik.
But then it's questionable. I mean, if he's not a tzaddik, there he's just someone who's very very hungry, perhaps on the brink of death, which is
though the Chumash leaves off Vayivez Esav Esabachor. Esav spurned this. He completely disrespected it.
Right.
Meaning
that seems to be
the sign off. That's the sign off of that story. It's that Esau, he rejected it.
Yeah, perhaps. What was it that? I mean, according to the Das Kanim, he rejected it previously, which is why Yaakov felt justified in taking the Bechora.
This is Yaakov's very first trick. This is Yaakov's first trick, and you know what? It doesn't seem like it's not the most crafty trick, right? We said Yaakov's not a bucky in being crafty, but this is more like, you know, I guess you could say he manipulated, but it was Esav's desperation.
He found the right time. He was an opportunist. He took advantage of the time. There's nothing shady. There's nothing tricky here. He just he saw Esav was at perhaps a moment of weakness, unless it was a constant, thing that Esau was at a moment of weakness. But we don't really know, because we don't know so many stories about Esau. But this is the one that we do have, where Esau was in a moment of weakness, and Yaakov took the opportunity to demonstrate that Esau was not fitting for the job. Now, you know my approach. Perhaps we can suggest that, Yaakov could have been more instrumental in keeping Esav in the proper position, to be a Bechor. It's unclear. There are
some. We know that our tzaddikim are judged kichut asara. So even in a story where maybe almost every action Yaakov did was appropriate, you know, Hashem could find one area where the tzaddik should have delivered, and maybe perhaps he didn't. But again, I think the takeaway is this is a very difficult story. You know, this can't be an easy story for you. We have to remember that Yaakov is a tzaddik, he's Bechir Tesheb Avos, and maybe this was a very difficult story. And maybe there are aspects of it that were correct and aspects that were more shady, more gray. I think if we walk away with one thing, it's a gray story, it's a difficult story, but he is the Bechir Tesheb Avos at the end of it.
Which is why I think, back to what we said at the beginning, I think it's appropriate to teach it to children. The way that I think most yeshivos teach it,
because
in a less nuanced way, because we absolutely need to grow up fully convinced, knowing and believing that Yaakov is a tzaddik.
But then they should listen to this podcast after.
What?
But then they should listen to this podcast after.
Yeah, when they're older and they're able to appreciate nuance and understand what it means to be judged kechut asahara and to be able to appreciate the complexity of life, and then you can go back and understand it. But the most important thing to walk away with is first of all trusting in in our avos, trusting in our mesorah, trusting in our roots, and knowing that Yaakov is the confirmed bechor, or at least heir of Avraham and Yitzchak, that at the end of the day Yitzchak did concede to the bracha. He gave him another bracha afterwards, that he was the correct bechor. Like, we need to know that with confidence, and we need to know that Yaakov is a tzaddik with confidence, and that is the most important thing. And if you want to get to a higher level of learning and a deeper appreciation for the story, and to explore the world of nuance and the philosophy of truth and how we define truth, then you can, you know, listen to this podcast or be mine in the sources. But to start off saying Yaakov, I don't think it's a disservice to teach it in the simple black and white. Yaakov is a tzaddik, and everything he did was not just justified, but completely correct. I mean, you don't have to say it fully exactly like that, but to teach it right in that fashion, I think, is appropriate.
I want to thank you so much for joining for this very, I think, important conversation on our parsha. It's nice to have you.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk Torah with you.
Awesome. Okay. So, well, that's all for this Real Talk Torah. Keep it real. Keep talking. Most importantly, keep the Torah. Thanks for joining us here in the database.